They are aflame. They burn. They bring the darkness when they come. And so all you can see is that their skin is aflame. Burn. Burn.
Collected on Palaheshev, 1172, 21 seconds pre-death. Subject was a baker's apprentice.
Shallan hurried down the hallway with its burnt orange colorings, the ceiling and upper walls now stained by the passing of black smoke from Yasna's soul casting. Hopefully, the paintings on the walls hadn't been ruined. Ahead, a small group of parshmen arrived, bearing rags, buckets, and stepladders to use in wiping off the soot. They bowed to her as she passed, uttering no words. Parshmen could speak, but they rarely did so. Many seemed mute. As a child, she'd found the patterns of their marbled skin beautiful. That had been before her father forbade her to spend any time with the parshmen. She turned her mind to her task. How was she going to convince Yasna Kerlin, one of the most powerful women in the world, to change her mind about taking Shallan as a ward? The woman was obviously stubborn. She had spent years resisting the devotary's attempts at reconciliation. She re-entered the broad main cavern with its lofty stone ceiling and bustling well-dressed occupants. She felt daunted, but that brief glimpse of the soul caster seduced her. Her family, House Devar, had prospered in recent years, coming out of obscurity. This had primarily been because of her father's skill in politics. He had been hated by many, but his ruthlessness had carried him far. So had the wealth lent by the discovery of several important new marble deposits on Devar lands. Shallan had never known enough to be suspicious of that wealth's origins. Every time the family had exhausted one of its quarries, her father had gone out with his surveyor and discovered a new one. Only after interrogating the surveyor had Shallan and her brothers discovered the truth. Her father, using his forbidden soul caster, had been creating new deposits at a careful rate. Not enough to be suspicious, just enough to give him the money he needed to further his political goals. Nobody knew where he'd gotten the fabriel which she now carried in her safe pouch. It was unusable, damaged on the same disastrous evening that her father had died.
Don't think about that.
They'd had a jeweler repair the broken soul caster, but it no longer worked. Their house steward, one of her father's close confidants, an advisor named Yuesh, had been trained to use the device, and he could no longer make it function. Her father's debts and promises were outrageous. Their choices were limited. Her family had some time, perhaps as long as a year, before the missed payments became egregious and before her father's absence became obvious. For once, her family's isolated backcountry estates were an advantage, providing a reason that communications were being delayed. Her brothers were scrambling, writing letters in her father's name, making a few appearances and spreading rumors that Bright Lord Devar was planning something big, all to give her time to make good on her bold plan. Find Yasna Kerlin, become her ward, learn where she kept her soul caster, then replace it with a non-functional one. With a Fabriel, they'd be able to make new quarries and restore their wealth. They'd be able to make food to feed their house soldiers. With enough wealth in hand to pay off debts and make bribes, they could announce their father's death and not suffer destruction. Shallan hesitated in the main hallway, considering her next move. What she planned to do was very risky. She'd have to escape without implicating herself in the theft. Though she devoted much thought to that, she still didn't know how she'd manage it. But Yasna was known to have many enemies. There had to be a way to pin the Fabriel's breaking on them instead. That step would come later. For now, Shallan had to convince Yasna to accept her as a ward. All other results were unacceptable. Nervously, Shallan held her arms in the sign of need, covered safe hand bent across her chest, and touching the elbow of her free hand, which was raised with fingers outspread. A woman approached, wearing the well-starched white-laced shirt and black skirt that were the universal sign of a master servant.
Brightness, the Palaneum.
The woman bowed and led Shallan farther into the depths of the long hallway. Most of the women here, servants included, wore their hair bound, and Shallan felt conspicuous with hers loose. The deep red color made her stand out even more. Soon, the grand hallway began to slope down steeply. The servant led Shallan to a pair of grand steel doors. The servant bowed, and Shallan dismissed her with a nod. Shallan couldn't help but admire the beauty of the doors. Their exterior was carved in an intricate geometric pattern with circles and lines and glyphs. It was some kind of chart, half on each door. There was no time to study the details, unfortunately, and she passed them by. Beyond the doors was a breathtakingly large room. The sides were of smooth rock, and they stretched high. The dim illumination made it impossible to tell just how high, but she saw flickers of distant light. Set into the walls were dozens of small balconies, much like the private box seats of a theater. Soft light shone from many of these. Shallan raised her safe hand to her breast, feeling dwarfed by the magnificent chamber.
Brightness.
A young master servant came up to her.
What do you need?
A new sense of perspective, apparently.
This room is called the Veil, that which comes before the Palinaeum itself. Both were here when the city was founded. Some think these chambers might have been cut by the Dawnsingers themselves.
Where are the books?
The Palinaeum proper is this way.
The servant gestured, leading her to a set of doors on the other side of the room. Through them, she entered a smaller chamber that was partitioned with walls of thick crystal. Shallan approached the nearest one, feeling it. The crystal surface was rough, like hewn rock.
Soulcast?
The servant nodded. Behind him, another servant passed, leading an elderly Ardent. Like most Ardents, the aged man had a shaved head and a long beard. His simple gray robes were tied with a brown sash. The servant led him around a corner, and Shallan could vaguely make out their shapes on the other side, shadows swimming through the crystal. She took a step forward.
I will need your chit of admittance, Brightness.
How much does one cost?
1,000 sapphire broms.
So much?
The king's many hospitals require much upkeep. The only things Carbranth has to sell are fish, bells, and information. The first two are hardly unique to us, but the third... Well, the Palinaeum has the finest collections of tomes and scrolls on Roshar. More even than the Holy Enclave in Valeth. At last count, there were over 700,000 separate texts in our archive.
Her father had owned exactly 87 books. Shallan had read them all several times over.
How much can be contained in 700,000 books?
The weight of that much information dazzled her. She found herself hungering to look through those hidden shelves. She could spend months just reading their titles. But no. Perhaps once she'd made certain her brothers were safe, once her house's finances were restored, she could return. Perhaps.
Where might I wait, if someone I know is inside?
You may use one of the reading alcoves. No chit is required to sit in one. There are parchment porters who will raise you to the higher levels if that is what you wish.
Thank you.
Shallan turned her back on the Palinaeum. She felt like a child again, locked in her room, not allowed to run through the gardens because of her father's paranoid fears.
Does Brightness Yasna have an alcove yet?
I can ask.
The servant led the way back into the Veil with its distant, unseen ceiling. He hurried off to speak with some others, leaving Shallan standing beside the doorway to the Palinaeum. She could run in, sneak through. No. Her brothers teased her for being too timid, but it was not timidity that held her back. There would undoubtedly be guards. Bursting in would only be futile. It would ruin any chance she had of changing Yasna's mind.
Change Yasna's mind. Prove myself.
Considering it made her sick. She hated confrontation. During her youth, she'd felt like a piece of delicate crystalware, locked in a cabinet to be displayed, but never touched. The only daughter, the last memory of Bright Lord Devar's beloved wife. It still felt odd to her that she had been the one to take charge after...
After the incident. After...
Memories attacked her. Nan Balat, bruised, his coat torn. A long silvery sword in her hand, sharp enough to cut stones as if they were water.
No, no, don't think of the past.
She sought solace in drawing, raising fingers to her satchel and reaching for her paper and pencils. The servant came back before she had a chance to get them out, however.
Brightness Yasna Kolin has indeed asked that a reading alcove be set aside for her. You may wait there for her if you wish it.
I do. Thank you.
The servant led her to a shadowed enclosure, inside of which four parchments stood upon a sturdy wooden platform. The servant and Shallan stepped onto the platform, and the parchmen pulled ropes that were strung into a pulley above, raising the platform up the stone shaft. The only lights were bronze spheres set at each corner of the lift ceiling, amethysts, which had a soft violet light.
I need a plan. Yasna Kulin does not seem the type to change her mind easily. I will have to surprise her, impress her.
They reached a level about 40 feet or so off the ground, and the servant waved for the porters to stop. Shallan followed the master servant down a dark hallway to one of the small balconies that extended out over the veil. It was round, like a turret, and had a waist-high stone rim with a wooden railing above that. Other occupied alcoves glowed with different colors from the spheres being used to light them. The darkness of the huge space made them seem to hover in the air. This alcove had a long, curving stone desk joined directly into the rim of the balcony. There was a single chair and a goblet-like crystal bowl. Shallan nodded in thanks to the servant, who withdrew. Then she pulled out a handful of spheres and dropped them into the bowl, lighting the alcove. She sat down in the chair and laid her satchel on the desk. She undid the laces on her satchel, busying herself as she tried to think of something, anything, that would persuade Yasna.
First, I need to clear my mind.
From her satchel, she removed a sheaf of thick drawing paper, a set of charcoal pencils of different widths, some brushes and steel pens, ink and watercolors. Finally, she took out her smaller notebook, bound in codex form, which contained the nature sketches she'd done during her weeks aboard the Wind's Pleasure. These were simple things, really, but worth more to her than a chest full of spheres. She took a sheet off the stack, then selected a fine pointed charcoal pencil, rolling it between her fingers. She closed her eyes and fixed an image in her mind. Carbranth, as she'd memorized it in that moment soon after landing on the docks. Waves surging against the wooden posts, a salty scent to the air. Men climbing rigging, calling to one another with excitement. And the city itself, rising up the hillside, homes stacked atop homes, not a speck of land wasted, bells distant, tinkling softly in the air. She opened her eyes and began to draw. Her fingers moved on their own, sketching broad lines first. The crack-like valley the city was situated in, the port. Here, squares to be homes. There, a slash to mark a switchback of the grand roadway that led up to the conclave. Slowly, bit by bit, she added detail. Shadows as windows, lines to fill out the roadways. Hints of people and carts to show the chaos of the thoroughfares. She had read of how sculptors worked. Many would take a blank stone block and work it into a vague shape first. Then they'd work it over again, carving more detail with each pass. It was the same for her in drawing. Broad lines first, then some details, then more, then down to the finest of lines. She had no formal training in pencils. She simply did what felt right. The city took shape beneath her fingers. She coaxed it free, line by line, scratch by scratch.
What would I do without this?
Tension bled from her body, as if released from her fingertips into the pencil. She lost track of time as she worked. Sometimes she felt like she was entering a trance, everything else fading. Her fingers almost seemed to draw of their own accord. It was so much easier to think while drawing. Before too long, she had copied her memory onto the page. She held up the sheet satisfied, relaxed, her mind clear. The memorized image of Carbranth was gone from her head. She'd released it into her sketch. There was a sense of relaxation to that, too, as if her mind was put under tension holding memories until they could be used. She did Yav next, standing shirtless in his vest and gesturing to the short porter who had pulled her up to the conclave. She smiled as she worked, remembering Yav's affable voice. He'd likely returned to the Wind's Pleasure by now.
Has it been 2 hours?
Probably.
She was always more excited by drawing animals and people than she was by drawing things. There was something energizing about putting a living creature onto the page. A city was lines and boxes, but a person was circles and curves. Could she get that smirk on Yob's face right? Could she show his lazy contentedness, the way he would flirt with a woman far above his station? And the porter, with his thin fingers and sandaled feet, his long coat and baggy pants, his strange language, his keen eyes, his plan to increase his tip by offering not just a ride, but a tour. When she drew, she didn't feel as if she worked with only charcoal and paper. In drawing a portrait, her medium was the soul itself. There were plants from which one could remove a tiny cutting, a leaf or a bit of stem, then plant it and grow a duplicate. When she collected a memory of a person, she was snipping free a bud of their soul, and she cultivated and grew it on the page. Charcoal for sinew, paper pulp for bone, ink for blood, the paper's texture for skin. Creation Spren began to gather around her pad, looking at her work. Like other Spren, they were said to always be around, but usually invisible. Sometimes you attracted them, sometimes you didn't. With drawing, skill seemed to make a difference. Creation Spren were of medium size, as tall as one of her fingers, and they glowed with a faint silvery light. They transformed perpetually, taking new shapes. Usually, the shapes were things they had seen recently. An urn, a person, a table, a wheel, a nail. Always of the same silvery color, always the same diminutive height. They imitated shapes exactly, but moved them in strange ways. A table would roll like a wheel, an urn would shatter and repair itself. Her drawing gathered about a half dozen of them, pulling them by her act of creation, just as a bright fire would draw flame spren. She'd learned to ignore them. They weren't substantial. If she moved her arm through one, its figure would smear like scattered sand, then reform. She never felt a thing when touching one. Eventually, she held up the page, satisfied. It depicted Yob and the porter in detail, with hints of the busy city behind. She'd gotten their eyes right. That was the most important. Each of the 10 essences had an analogous part of the human body. Blood for liquid, hair for wood, and so forth. The eyes were associated with crystal and glass, the windows into a person's mind and spirit. She set the page aside. Some men collected trophies. Others collected weapons or shields. Many collected spheres. Shallan collected people. People and interesting creatures. Perhaps it was because she'd spent so much of her youth in a virtual prison. She'd developed the habit of memorizing faces, then drawing them later, after her father had discovered her sketching the gardens. His daughter? Drawing pictures of dark eyes? He'd be furious with her. One of the infrequent times he'd directed his infamous temper at his daughter. After that, she'd done drawings of people only when in private, instead using her open drawing times to sketch the insects, crustaceans, and plants of the manor gardens. Her father hadn't minded this. Zoology and botany were proper feminine pursuits, and had encouraged her to choose natural history as her calling. She took out a third blank sheet. It seemed to beg her to fill it. A blank page was nothing but potential, pointless until it was used. Like a fully infused sphere cloistered inside a pouch, prevented from making its light useful.
Fill me.
The creation spren gathered around the page. They were still, as if curious, anticipatory. Shallan closed her eyes and imagined Yasna Kolin standing before the blocked door, the soul caster glowing on her hand, the hallway hushed. Attendants holding their breath, an anxious king, a still reverence. Shallan opened her eyes and began to draw with vigor, intentionally losing herself. The less she was in the now and the more she was in the then, the better the sketch would be. The other two pictures had been warm-ups. This was the day's masterpiece. With the paper bound onto the board, safe hand holding that, her free hand flew across the page, occasionally switching to other pencils. Soft charcoal for deep, thick blackness, like Yasna's beautiful hair. hard charcoal for light grays like the powerful waves of light coming from the Soulcaster's gems. For a few extended moments, Shallan was back in that hallway again, watching something that should not be, a heretic wielding one of the most sacred powers in all the world. The power of change itself, the power by which the Almighty had created Roshar. He had another name, allowed to pass only the lips of Ardents. Elethanathile, he who transforms. Shallan could smell the musty hallway. She could feel her own heart beating in anticipation. The boulder would soon change, sucking away the stormlight in Yasna's gemstone. It would give up its essence, becoming something new. And then the memory faded, returning her to the quiet, dim alcove. The page now held a perfect rendition of the scene, worked in blacks and grays. The princess's proud figure regarded the fallen stone, demanding that it give way before her will. It was her. Shallan knew, with the intuitive certainty of an artist, that this was one of the finest pieces she had ever done. In a very small way, she had captured Yasna Kerlin, something the devotees had never managed. That gave her a euphoric thrill. Even if this woman rejected Shallan again, one fact would not change. Yasna Kerlin had joined Shallan's collection. Shallan wiped her fingers on her cleaning cloth, then lifted the paper. She noted absently that she'd attracted some 24 creation spren now. She would have to lacquer the page with ply tree sap to set the charcoal and protect it from smudges. She had some in her satchel. First, she wanted to study the page and the figure it contained.
Who is Yasna Kerlin?
Not one to be cowed, certainly. She was a woman to the bone, master of the feminine arts, but not by any means delicate. Such a woman would appreciate Shallan's determination. She would listen to another request for wardship, assuming it was presented properly. Yasna was also a rationalist, a woman with the audacity to deny the existence of the Almighty himself based on her own reasoning. Yasna would appreciate strength, but only if it was shaped by logic. Shallan nodded to herself, taking out a fourth sheet of paper and a fine-tipped brush pen, then shaking and opening her jar of ink. Yasna had demanded proof of Shallan's logic and writing skills.
Well, what better way to do that than to supplicate the woman with words?
Brightness, Yasna Kerlin.
Shallan painted the letters as neatly and beautifully as she could. She could have used a reed instead, but a brush pen was for works of art. She intended this page to be just that.
You have rejected my petition. I accept that. Yet, as anyone trained in formal inquiry knows, no supposition should be treated as axiomatic.
The actual argument, usually read no supposition, save for the existence of the Almighty himself, should be held as axiomatic. But this wording would appeal to Yasna.
A scientist must be willing to change her theories if experiment disproves them. I hold to the hope that you treat decisions in a like manner, as preliminary results pending further information. From our brief interaction, I can see that you appreciate tenacity. You complimented me on continuing to seek you out. Therefore, I presume that you will not find this letter a breach of good taste. Take it as proof of my ardor to be your ward, and not as disdain for your expressed decision.
Shallan raised the end of her brush pen to her lips as she considered her next step. The creation spren slowly faded away, vanishing. There was said to be logic spren, in the form of tiny storm clouds, who were attracted to great arguments, but Shallan had never seen them.
You expect proof of my worthiness. I wish I could demonstrate that my schooling is more complete than our interview revealed. Unfortunately, I haven't the grounds for such an argument. I have weaknesses in my understanding that is plain and not subject to reasonable dispute. But the lives of men and women are more than logical puzzles. The context of their experiences is invaluable in making good decisions. My study in logic does not rise to your standards, but even I know that rationalists have a rule. One cannot apply logic as an absolute where human beings are concerned. We are not beings of thought only. Therefore, the soul of my argument here is to give perspective on my ignorance. Not by way of excuse, but of explanation. You express displeasure that one such as I should be trained so inadequately. What of my stepmother? What of my tutors? Why was my education handled so poorly? The facts are embarrassing. I have had few tutors and virtually no education. My stepmother tried, but she had no education herself. It is a carefully guarded secret, but many of the rural Vaden houses ignore the proper training of their women. I had three different tutors when I was very young, but each left after a few months, citing my father's temper or rudeness as her reason. I was left to my own devices in education. I have learned what I could through reading, filling in the gaps by taking advantage of my own curious nature. But I will not be capable of matching knowledge with someone who has been given the benefit of a formal and expensive education. Why is this an argument that you should accept me? Because everything I have learned has come by way of great personal struggle. What others were handed, I had to hunt. I believe that because of this, my education, limited though it is, has extra worth and merit. I respect your decisions, but I do ask you to reconsider. Which would you rather have? A ward who is able to repeat the correct answers because an overpriced tutor drilled them into her? Or a ward who had to struggle and fight for everything she has learned? I assure you that one of those two will prize your teachings far more than the other.
She raised her brush. Her argument seemed imperfect now that she considered them.
I expose my ignorance and expect Yasna to welcome me?
Still, it seemed the right thing to do. For all the fact that this letter was a lie built of truths, she hadn't truly come to partake of Yasna's knowledge. She had come as a thief. That made her conscience itch, and she nearly reached out and crumpled the page. Shallan heard the steps and leaped to her feet, spinning, safe hand held to her breast. She fumbled for words to explain her presence to Yasna Kolin. Light and shadows flickered in the hallway. Then a figure hesitantly looked into the alcove, a single white sphere cupped in one hand for light. It was not Yasna. It was a man in his early 20s, wearing simple gray robes.
Ah, an ardent.
Shallan relaxed. The young man noticed her. His face was narrow, his blue eyes keen. His beard was trimmed short and square, his head shaved.
Ah, excuse me, Brightness. I thought this was the alcove of Yasna Kolin.
It is.
Oh, you're waiting for her too?
Yes.
Would you mind terribly if I waited with you?
Of course not, Ardent.
She nodded her head in respect, then gathered up her things in haste, preparing the seat for him.
I can't take your seat, Brightness. I'll fetch another for myself.
She raised a hand in protest, but he had already retreated. He returned a few moments later, carrying a chair from another alcove. He was tall and lean, and she decided, with slight discomfort, rather handsome. Her father had owned only three Ardents, all elderly men. They had traveled his lands and visited the villages, ministering to the people, helping them reach points in their glories and callings. She had their faces in her collection of portraits. The Ardent set down his chair. He hesitated before sitting, glancing at the table.
My, my.
For a moment, Shallan thought he was reading her letter, and she felt an irrational surge of panic. The Ardent, however, was regarding the three drawings that lay at the head of the table, awaiting lacquer.
You did these, Brightness?
Yes, Ardent.
She lowered her eyes.
No need to be so formal. Please, I am Brother Kabsal, or just Kabsal. Really, it's fine. And you are?
Shallan Devar.
By Vedelaedev's golden keys, Brightness. Did Yasna Kolin teach you this skill with the pencil?
No, Ardent.
Still so formal. Tell me, am I so intimidating as that?
I have been brought up to show respect to Ardents.
Well, I myself find that respect is like manure. Use it where needed and growth will flourish. Spread it on too thick and things just start to smell.
Had the Ardent, a servant of the Almighty, just spoken of manure?
And Ardent is a representative of the Almighty himself. To show you lack of respect would be to show it to the Almighty.
I see. And this is how you'd respond if the Almighty himself appeared to you here? All of this formality and bowing?
Well, no.
Ah, and how would you react?
I suspect with screams of pain, as it is written that the Almighty's glory is such that any who look upon him would immediately be burned to ash.
Wisely spoken indeed. Please do sit, though. You still appear conflicted. What must I do to put you at ease? Shall I step up onto this desk here and do a jig?
Shallan blinked in surprise.
No objection. Well, then...
He began to climb up on his chair.
No, please!
Are you certain?
Yes, please. I promise not to respect you any longer.
He hopped down and seated himself. He leaned closer to her as if conspiratorially.
The table jig threat almost always works. I've only ever had to go through with it once, due to a lost bet against Brother Lanin. The Master Ardent of our monastery nearly keeled over in shock.
You're an Ardent. You're forbidden to have possessions. What did you bet?
2 deep breaths of a winter rose's fragrance, and the sunlight's warmth on your skin. We can be rather creative at times. Years spent marinating in a monastery can do that to a man. Now, you were about to explain to me where you learned such skill with a pencil.
Practice. I should suspect that is how everyone learns eventually.
Wise words again. I'm beginning to wonder which of us is the Ardent. But surely you had a master to teach you?
Dando's the Oilsworn.
Ah, a true master of pencils, if ever there was one. Now, not that I doubt your word, Brightness, but I'm rather intrigued how Dando's Heraldon could have trained you in arts, as, last I checked, he's suffering rather a terminal and perpetual ailment. Namely, that of being dead. For 300 years.
My father had a book of his instruction.
You learned this from a book?
Yes.
I need to read more.
Shallan took a memory of him sitting there, admiration and perplexity blending on his face as he studied the picture, rubbing his bearded chin with one finger. He smiled pleasantly, setting down the picture.
You have lacquer?
I do.
She got it out of her satchel. It was contained in a bulb sprayer of the type often used for perfume. He accepted the small jar and twisted the cap on the front, then gave the bottle a shake and tested the lacquer on the back of his hand. He nodded in satisfaction and reached for the drawing.
A piece such as this should not be allowed to risk smudging.
I can lacquer it. No need to trouble yourself.
It is no trouble. It's an honor. Besides, I'm an Ardent. We don't know what to do with ourselves when we aren't busying about, doing things others could do for themselves. It is best just to humor me.
He began to apply the lacquer, dusting the page with careful puffs. She had trouble keeping herself from reaching to snatch the sketch away. Fortunately, his hands were careful, and the lacquer went on evenly. He'd obviously done this before.
You are from Yakived, I presume.
From the hair or from the accent?
From the way you treat Ardents. The Vaden Church is by far the most traditional. I have visited your lovely country on 2 occasions. While your food sits well in my stomach, the amount of bowing and scraping you show Ardents made me uncomfortable.
Perhaps you should have danced on a few tables.
I considered it, but my brother and sister Ardents from your country would likely have dropped dead of embarrassment. I would hate to have that on my conscience. The Almighty is not kind toward those who kill his priests.
I should think that killing in general would be frowned upon.
What does Brightness Yasna think of your skill?
I don't think she cares. She doesn't seem terribly appreciative of the visual arts.
So I have heard. It's one of her few faults, unfortunately.
Another being that little matter of her heresy?
Indeed. I must admit, I stepped in here expecting indifference, not deference. How did you come to be part of her entourage?
Shallan started, realizing for the first time that Brother Cabsal must have assumed her to be one of the Bright Lady Colin's attendants, perhaps a ward.
Bother.
Hmm?
It appears I've inadvertently misled you, Brother Cabsal. I'm not associated with Brightness Yasna. Not yet, anyway. I've been trying to get her to take me on as a ward.
Ah.
I'm sorry.
For what? You did nothing wrong. He turned the picture for her to see. It was perfectly lacquered without any smears. If you would do me a favor, child.
Anything.
He raised an eyebrow at that.
Anything reasonable.
By whose reason?
Mine, I guess.
Pity. Then I will limit myself. If you would kindly let Brightness Yasna know that I called upon her.
She knows you?
What business does a Herdazian Ardent have with Yasna, a confirmed atheist?
Oh, I wouldn't say that. I'd hope she's heard my name, though, since I've requested an audience with her several times.
You want to try to convert her, I presume?
She presents a unique challenge. I don't think I could live with myself if I didn't at least try to persuade her.
And we wouldn't want you to be unable to live with yourself, as the alternative harks back to your nasty habit of almost killing Ardents.
Exactly. Anyway, I think a personal message from you might help where written requests have been ignored.
I doubt that.
Well, if she refuses, it only means that I'll be back. That would mean, hopefully, that we shall meet each other again. So I look forward to it.
I as well. And I'm sorry again about the misunderstanding.
Brightness, please, don't take responsibility for my assumptions.
I should hesitate to take responsibility for you in any manner or regard, Brother Capsule. But I still feel bad.
It will pass, but I'll do my best to make you feel well again. Is there anything you're fond of, other than respecting Ardents and drawing amazing pictures, that is?
Jam.
He cocked his head.
I like it. You asked what I was fond of. Jam.
So it shall be.
Capsule rose and withdrew into the dark corridor, fishing in his robe pocket for his sphere to give him light. In moments, he was gone.
Why didn't he wait for Yasna to return himself?
Shallan shook her head, then lacquered her other two pictures. She had just finished letting them dry, packing them in her satchel, when she heard footsteps in the hallway. Shallan hurriedly gathered her things, leaving the letter on the desk, then stepped up to the side of the alcove to wait. Yasna Kolin entered a moment later, accompanied by a small group of servants. She did not look pleased.